the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another edition of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, the Monday flagship. Joey is not here this week. Unfortunately, he is, well, enjoying somewhere nice and warm, nice and relaxing. He'll come back refreshed, recharged, and ready to go. But I am, well, I have a co-host, not to replace Joey, but to take his place temporarily, Wayfaring Bitcoiner. Wayfaring, how are you, brother? You're muted, by the way.
I'm great. Yeah, I didn't want to inject any unnecessary noise into the introduction, but good to be here, Len. I know I've got some big shoes to fill with Joey being out.
You'll do fine. In fact, this might be the prelude to get rid of me. So if you do a good enough job, you might be the new co-host of the show, and I'll be on the sidelines looking in. So do a wonderful job, and finally we could get rid of me and get some competent people on board here. So aside from Joey, of course. Anyways, before we go any further, there are two sponsors of this show, not one, but two, and I'm going to talk about them both. Number one, we have EasyDNS. So everybody has a website, except for us, but we're working on that, so don't give us too much flack. But if you have a website and you want to migrate over to a good company that could help you out, well, EasyDNS web hosting, they got that covered. WordPress, it's there. Email hosting, not too shabby, they have that. You can migrate your Gmail over to your own, and it would be a personalized email, so you could have something at canadianbitcoiners.com, for instance, if we had ours up and running. Remember, this is private email, secure IMAP email hosting, Anycast DNS, domain name registrations. There's lots that you could do over there. It's secure, it's private, you could pay with Bitcoin. Check them out, do the reviews, do your own research, and you'll find EasyDNS is a great place to do business with your email and your web hosting and anything along those lines. But we also have a second sponsor, and that is Bold Bitcoin. You could buy your Bitcoin. Everybody wants to buy Bitcoin. You could sell your Bitcoin. And if you want to sell your Bitcoin, I want to know who you are. I'm going to shame and name you. You could also buy Liquid over there. You could also buy Lightning Bitcoin through Bold. Pretty cool stuff. And you could live on a Bitcoin standard. What does that mean? Well, you could pay your bills with Bitcoin. You could buy gift cards. And then with those gift cards, you go out into the wild and spend it. So indirectly, you're spending your Bitcoin to fund your lifestyle. Really cool stuff. But did I mention you could also get KYC-free Bitcoin through purchasing through Bull Bitcoin? No? Well, here you go. 6,000 locations available in Canada. And I was talking to Wayfaring before the show. That's more locations than you can buy coffee at Tim Hortons in Canada. So there's 6,000 locations-ish of Canada Post that you could trade in your dirty fiat, 2% fees, $3 per transaction, and away you go. It's one of the strongest, the strongest on-chain privacy that any exchange has in our great nation, because they don't even reuse Bitcoin addresses. Other exchanges do. It's non-custodial. Use our referral code below. You know what? $21 are going to be added to your account when you find it. So check it out. Not too bad. And you're off to the races. Wayfaring, there's something else I want to talk about. Next week, we're going to be giving away something. One of these guys, for people who are unaware, this is a SATS card from CoinKite. What's so special about this? Well, it's a very unique device. It replaces the Open Dime. It's a little bit better than that because instead of a one-time use, this is a 10-time use. But what's so special about this? We're going to be loading it up with $100 worth of Bitcoin, giving it out to a lucky viewer. I'm not going to say listener because it's a viewer. I'll explain why. So $50 coming from us, $50 coming from Bull Bitcoin. Thank you, Bull, for helping to fund this as well. To get this, you have to join our Discord. I will right now put it in the chat, the invite to our Discord. So getting on our Discord just gets you into the draw for getting this for next week. Then in order to get this, so once you're in the draw, we will be announcing the winner in the live chat next week. If you are in the live chat, and of course you're on our Discord, you're going to be able to get this. We're going to send this out to you with $100 worth of Canadian in Bitcoin. Not too shabby. So there you go. Check it out. You got to get on our Discord, join it, and then also next week, join our chat for $100 potentially that's going to be added to your, well, to your sats card. It's going to be sent to you and you'll be good to go. We have a fountain account, and we get lots of boosts over there. Wayfaring, you ready to hear some of these boosts? Because a couple of them are pretty good. I'm not sure if you have you been through this process before. So I'm only going to name off the top five, because before we used to name a whole bunch. So I'm just going to name off the top five boosts. Number one, Al Cool J boosted 500 sats. Not even 5 minutes in, but Mike Mentzer is the man. Yes, he is the man. This is with respect to Joey talking about him. And he was a gentleman from the 70s, maybe 80s, that was working out. And he did the one workout per week, worked out hard, and relaxed for the rest of the week. And Joey was wondering if that's the way to go. But nonetheless, thank you for boosting in those 500 sats, Al Cool J. MCOT, 523 sats. Nice rants. We're so end days. And I agree with you. This is closer to the end than we are to the beginning. Rander boosts in for 555 sats. Guys, I signed a 10-year rate on my very first mortgage in 2017. They existed back then. I would assume they are still here now. You just rarely ever see or hear of them. And in fact, I did some digging. In fact, there are quite a few that they're offering. So you can get 10-year rates right now in Canada. It's still not, has not been stopped. And good for you for getting a 10-year rate in 2017. Hopefully it was a good rate. And you're laughing at the people that now have variable mortgages that are taking it up the ass. So Sir Snakes a Lot boosted 2,100 sats. Thanks, Joey, for helping me on Twitter and passing my issue on to Francis at Bull Bitcoin. Cannot say good enough stuff about Bull and Francis. Joey and Len are also stand-up guys. Cheers. Yeah, man, we are. And Mickles boosts in 5,000 sats. Okay, I changed the name from a bunch of numbers and funded Fountain from Wallet of Satoshi for a transaction fee of 1 sat. Amazing. What's up from YEG Edmonton? My third boost ever and learning always. So thank you, Mickles. Now we have a name that we could associate with your boost, and appreciate you sending us those boosts, those sats, all the way from Edmonton. Hopefully the weather is okay over there. Wayfaring, before we go any further, maybe we just talk about who you are, because I just went right into the show. Give us an idea about who you are, because we haven't really talked about you in the past. I think I referenced you a little bit before on Twitter before I took my hiatus and no longer there. Wayfaring, who the heck are you? And why do we have you here?
Yeah, I'm just I'm a good friend of the show. I think Joey quotes me pretty often, and he's friendly on Twitter to me. He gives me a lot of likes and retweets, so I appreciate that, Joey. But yeah, I'm just a humble memer. I'm a Bitcoiner, and I'm happy to be joining the show today.
Thank you for joining us.
I want to say this too. Working out once a week is definitely not the way to go. Don't do this. You should be working out every day. You should be challenging yourself every day.
Agreed. So Joey, there you go. So you are aware. And thank you for reminding me, Joey, for bringing the branding back on. I just did that. So but we were talking that the idea, what was his name? Mike M, we'll call him. And I was hypothesizing back in the day, maybe there were some cocktails that were more readily available that provided people to do that type of regimen and still make massive gains. So, and maybe it's not so accepted these days, especially if somebody wants to go more natty, then maybe it's doing that type of regimen may not work. But there you go. Mark Jeffovich is in the chat saying thanks for nice shirt. So yeah, I wore this the last time I did the Axis of Easy. It just came up in the first time of the watch this time around. Thanks for popping in the chat. But anyways, Wayfaring, before we dive right in, price of Bitcoin, do you happen to have that handy in US dollars?
Yeah, I sure do. It's $30,094.09. We're getting up there.
We dropped quite a bit. And in Canadian, it's 39,718. So, we got a ways to go. Good stacking time. Not financial advice. Do your own research. But it's a good time to stack. But remember, as we transition into the show notes to talk about what's going on, remember, everything we say is all tongue-in-cheek. Take everything with a grain of salt. Not only is it not financial advice, this is all satirical stuff. So keep that in mind. Wayfaring, you ready to go right into it?
I'm ready, man. Let's do it.
Okay. You know what? Let's leave things off with the saga between Damas and Apple, because it looks like this might be finally coming to an end. And for those who aren't aware, Damas is the iOS client that is used to connect to Nostr, and that's a Twitter-like version of the Nostr, where you can use the Nostr platform to talk to people on an Ostra network, not Ostra platform. And Apple didn't like the way Bitcoin was being exchanged on Nostr. And through that, it was through Zap. So somebody wrote a post on Nostr and people liked it. Somebody else could then tip them with a Zap. And it was just, you know, a way of showing that they appreciate what you did and giving you a heads up and say, here you go. Here's some sats for your good post. Apple found out through their infinite wisdom that this might be selling of content. And through that, there was a butting of the heads between Apple and Damas. Well, it looks like there's a maybe resolution to this. Zapple Pay. You heard about this?
I heard a bit about it, yeah.
It's really cool. So a pair of independent developers came up with a workaround that allowed to send zaps on posts simply by commenting with an emoji. So you could basically, you go online and you enter your Nostr public key, whatever emoji you like, and a link to the wallet. And voila, every time you use that emoji within Nostr through Damas, it is then going to send a zap. So it's beautiful. Doing this outside of the system of Damas. So Apple now cannot lay claim that Damas users through Nostr are selling content, because this is now outside, because it's a pair of independent developers that worked on this that figured this thing out. I absolutely love this. Now, I've been very vocal about how Apple has been doing things. It's the walled garden, and I know a lot of people like it, and I can understand why. It's simple, easy to use, and it just every time you pick up the phone, you get that fuzzy feeling inside. But still, this goes to show you that they are potentially against Bitcoin. If you're looking at this as selling content, and if they're going and starting a small, I don't say a war, but at least some sort of skirmish against Damas, this is something that they could potentially do moving forward to other things, maybe wallets they've done in the past, and who the heck knows? This could be the very beginning of a war against Bitcoin from Apple. But people are very intuitive. They could think outside the box, and these guys did that by doing the Zapple Pay. So what are your thoughts on this story?
Well, there's a few amazing things about this. The first and most amazing thing, in my opinion, is that these are just independent developers who are able to do this. And they're able to do this because Nostr is an open source project, right? Like these weren't Damas developers, right? These were independent of Damas.
That's right. They were independent. Yeah. And I think they're actually for the Mutiny Wallet, if I recall correctly, but I don't know.
Amazing. It's even better if that's the case. And I'll shout out those guys too. I have them in my notes for launching their wallet last week in Nashville at the Lightning Summit. But that's the first and most important part of this, is that these are two independent developers who are able to do this because we're now operating in Nostr, which is an open source project. It's public infrastructure for information exchange, the way that Lightning is public infrastructure for internet micropayments. So amazing stuff there. The other thing about this that I like, and in particular, I like that Apple has taken this approach, because it's acting as a forcing function for us to get away from things like the iOS App Store, right? They ultimately can control what goes on their App Store, and we need to get away from that. And I think that these types of things just show that we're ready to do that. So I love it. I love to see it. A few technical things about this. So Apple had a problem with the per post zapping, right? They didn't have a problem if you attached your Lightning wallet to your profile page and received sats. They just didn't want there to be a button on a post where you could zap people. That's right.
That's correct. And so it's the individual, and they call it the selling of the content. So adding your wallet to your account is not the big issue here. It's the sending of the zaps per post or something along those lines. That's what they have contention with. So it seems odd.
So I saw actually a post on Twitter. Twitter, 2 years ago now, introduced tipping over Lightning.
I think it was last year, but something like that, 1 or 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's like when the last year or two they introduced tipping over Lightning, and Elon is now trying to make payments a thing on Twitter. I don't know if he just doesn't know that this feature exists in the app or what, but it's through, I believe, the Strike API. And I believe when they first introduced that idea, they played with the idea of doing it per comment or per post, and they ran into the same issue, but it didn't get as much publicity as this one.
Interesting. Interesting. So I know that he's also kind of talking about doing Doge on Twitter.
He's going to do the same thing that that Facebook tried to do. I mean, Meta tried to create their own cryptocurrency. I forget what they called it, but it collapsed.
Libra?
Yeah, Libra, and then it was called something else before that. But they tried to do the same thing, and I imagine that Twitter will either go that way or go with Doge.
You know that Twitter is now selling, they're giving money to content creators on there that have the check mark as a way to encourage them to stay on. So they're essentially paying them for the service that they provide Twitter. Yeah. You're aware of this, right?
Yeah, and they serve advertisements in the threads under the posts. That's how they get that rev share.
Now, does Apple, are they going to get a copy of this or their slice of the pie here? Now, if they're going to do this to Damis for simply zapping somebody for posting a note, why doesn't the same thing apply for these blue checks that are very large in providing revenue for Twitter? Doesn't Apple have the same type of contention with them for that? Or
no, of course not. This is the problem with social media. This is how social media was captured. And Dorsey has said this on a bunch of podcasts, especially his more recent podcasts. Social media got captured by advertisers. And this is all part of the plan, man. Like, if you can go value for value, it's great because I'm a user that's paying you for some value that you provided and you get 100% of what I want to pay you. And now with advertising, you can just shove ads into someone's post and Apple gets their cut, Twitter gets their cut, and the person that posted the original content, arguably the IP, although I'm sure Twitter has something in their TOS that says it's their IP when you post it on their app. But the actual creator gets some tiny fraction of like what ultimately their value is.
I give them credit for thinking outside the box, but I think it's just going to create some hassles moving forward, especially with Apple. But that's just my thinking. Anyways, let's move on. And I want to talk about some big money that is betting on Bitcoin. We've been talking a lot in the past few weeks about BlackRock and the ETF filing, and not just them. There have been several other ETF applications that are filed in the past little while. And the SEC, we talked about, they deny BlackRock's for it just not being a properly filed application, which seems to be strange. I would think if anybody would know how to file an ETF application, it'd be BlackRock, but that's just neither here nor there. But BlackRock's application's in the system, that's fine. But there's reports this past week that another big company, Vanguard, it's a $7.2 trillion asset management firm. Everybody's heard of Vanguard. Well, they have now reported to have 10% ownership in each Marathon and Riot. And both of those are Bitcoin, publicly traded Bitcoin mining companies that work and operate out of the United States. And these are no small companies, 10% ownership. Keep that in mind, each of those two. I checked a couple of days ago, Marathon's market cap was $3.07 billion with a B. So 10% of that would be $307 million. Now, granted, Marathon's share price has doubled in the past month. So I don't think they bought it all in the past little while. They must have bought it some time ago when the prices were depressed compared to what it is now. But still, they put in a hefty dollar figure into that. And Riot as well, it was $3.4 billion market cap as of a couple of days ago. So that's 10% of that, $340 million. Riot shares as well boosted up about 100%, essentially doubled in the past months, similar to a Marathon. So they must have bought in before the run up. But what I'm trying to get at is that Vanguard, they obviously know which way the wind is blowing. Maybe they're even manipulating the market, so to speak, too, in some way. They're putting some big money into Bitcoin mining companies. I don't think they're going to do this with the intention of holding to the end of time. Eventually, they're going to sell and try to gain some fiat gains out of this. This is what they do, and this is the game they play, so I can understand that. But what I'm trying to get at is there is some big movers here that they look at Bitcoin, or at least Bitcoin-adjacent companies, and this being Riot and Marathon, as a good play. So they must be getting wind that the SEC may be approving one of these ETFs in a not-too-distant future. Why? Because if they do, the price of Bitcoin, as well as the price of the shares for the share price for these companies, is absolutely going to moon. So are they timing the market correctly? Do they have some inside information? I do not know. But you know what I would suggest is take note of this. And if you're looking to stack Bitcoin, especially now, again, not financial advice, the price of the Bitcoin went down today compared to what it was a few days ago. it might be a good time to stack away, because if this comes out to be true, the SEC approves the ETF, Vanguard's pumping in big money into the miners, there may be something big coming in a very, very near future. And you don't want to be on the outside looking in, you want to be inside looking out. So thoughts?
Yeah, this is a double-edged sword for me. I like to see money getting pumped in. I like to see people finally coming around to the idea that they need to start taking this thing seriously. And then on the other side of it, I just don't really care that much. Like I'm gonna keep buying no matter what. No matter what the price is, I'm going to continue to exchange my dirty fiat money for Bitcoin. And I view Bitcoin much more as a network than as an asset. And so I'm not in this thing to get rich. I'm in this thing for the freedom, for the freedom technology that it is. But yeah, I mean, I love to see it. I love to see, I think it's kind of a capitulation from these big players, like especially the BlackRock news, I think is just major capitulation from somebody that was saying that Bitcoin was primarily used for money laundering and now they want an ETF for it. Yeah, man, I love to see it. And who knows, maybe they are just trying to make a quick buck here. Maybe they're on the timing and they know that some of these ETFs are going to be approved and that these mining stocks are an easy way for them to get some indirect exposure to it before the price goes up.
And you talked about you're very bullish on the network, rather, I mean, not really the asset, but like the network itself is really what draws you. Are there any projects in particular that are really exciting for you? I'm curious because I know there's always something that's being released or talked about every week, but you have your finger on the pulse of this more than most people. So I'm curious to pick your brain on this and if there's anything that's really exciting to you.
I mean, there's always stuff going on, of course. I don't know. I'm just bullish on the network. I think that, you know, every time I try to make a transaction, it goes through. that's what ultimately matters. And I think I'm excited to see people starting to take the privacy aspect of it a little bit more seriously. And I'm excited to see some companies that are trying to make it easier for people to do some of the basic stuff like self-custody. I know Block is going to release a new hardware wallet soon that should make it easier for people to take custody of their own Bitcoin. And they've partnered, not surprisingly, but some were surprised by it, with Coinbase, which is where a ton of people, especially in the US, hold their Bitcoin, which is a terrible thing. So I was actually excited to see Block trying to get to that large market share of people who aren't holding Bitcoin correctly. And yeah, so I don't know. I'm bullish on the network. I'm excited to see conferences growing, or not conferences, meetups. I was at a local meetup where I am now last week or 2 weeks ago. And it was about four or five times the size that it was the last time I was there. Of course, things like Bitcoin Park in Nashville are blowing up. They just held the Lightning Summit. And so I'm excited to see people building on Lightning. I mentioned earlier that the Mutiny Wallet was released. The Mutiny Wallet's a really cool product. I don't know if you saw, Len, or if this is something you had on your notes, and if it is on your notes, we can wait to discuss it. But Phoenix Wallet issued an update that includes
the third generation. Yeah.
And so that should help people. I know you run a Lightning node, right? So you understand, you know, when incoming liquidity, they can open new channels periodically, and it just kind of disrupts things. And splicing helps take care of some of that. So there's a lot of cool shit going on, man.
So, I mean, I could give some feedback into that, or some like insight into that. So the Phoenix wallet is now being touted as a third generation self-custodial Lightning wallet, and the previous one was a second generation. So it's all just semantics. There's nothing really specific here. That's just naming nomenclature that they're using. So really, this is a custodial Lightning wallet, similar to what Wallet Satoshi is. That's custodial as well. But there's new features in this third generation. One is that splicing, as you mentioned. So it's going to be a single dynamic channel that's going to be available versus a static channel that requires constant rebalancing with people that run Lightning nodes, that some like myself, that just, it's, I don't want to say nuisance, but it's just part of the process of dealing with a Lightning node. So there's going to be no more 1% fee on inbound liquidity. There's going to be better predictability due to this single dynamic channel, better control. Right now, though, it's only available on Android. And in fact, the way to get it, you have to send an email and ask for the beta. I sent an email a little while ago and never replied back to me. I don't know if it's because they don't like me or if it's because they got inundated with requests. Either way, I wish I got on the beta, but I didn't. The ETA for the iOS is a few weeks away. So they are trying right now with this to overcome some issues with the previous, what I said, they're now third generation. The second generation wallet had some issues before where Phoenix could create many channels with the second generation and users would end up with dozens of channels. And that was not rare. Sometimes each incoming transaction, either for Lightning or on-chain, may result in a new channel. So obviously that's going to just increase the number of channels and make it less efficient. And in the second generation, they had inbound liquidity that was scattered across many channels, and it became very hard to predict when an incoming payment would trigger the creation of a new channel. So the unpredictability was frustrating for users because opening a channel comes at a cost, the cost being Satoshis. And from the point of view of the wallet provider, each individual channel carries a risk because the channel will need to be closed at some time. And every time it's closed, there's a cost of 3,000 sats. So that as well comes at a cost. So now what they have is each user has one channel. There's no more scattered liquidity or splitting issues. And they're going to be adding or moving funds to the channel doesn't add future risk and can be priced into current cost. But there's something odd about this. I'm not sure if you saw this, the fees. If you look at the fees now versus what they were before, the fees are higher. Even though this third generation splicing and all that, this jazz, the fees are higher now. So sending via Lightning, the fees now are 0.4%. Before was 0.05% to 0.5%. So it was a bigger range, but now it's static at 0.4 versus a much more wider range that was much cheaper. Receiving via Lightning is free before, free now. Sending on chain, just mining fees before now. And also receiving on chain, before it was 1% with minimum of 3,000 sats. Now it's the mining fees plus 1,000 sats at a time. So sending via Lightning is the only one I can see that's higher and could be significantly higher. So with all this being said, this may be slightly more costly for the end user, but it may be more... it's going to be easier to use and you're not going to be dealing with channels that are just constantly opening and closing. And it's going to make the whole network more efficient. So that's basically Phoenix Wallet in a nutshell. I'm not sure if you want to add anything more to that.
No, I would just say that cost, I didn't realize the price or the, I guess the send price or the send fee jumped up by that amount, but I guess maybe it's the cost of the simplicity that they're providing with splicing. Sorry, I didn't mean to take you off of your... we were talking about lines, before.
I have all these things that I have written down here, and this is a topic I wanted to discuss today. And you talked about also the Block Wallet. I don't think it has a specific name, or am I wrong? Does it have a...
I don't know. I signed up for the beta, but I haven't looked at it since I signed up.
So the one thing I have questions, and I know we talked about this offline before, because it's linked up with Coinbase, and the way it works, the way I understand it, and if I'm wrong, anybody please let me know, is that once you buy your Bitcoin from Coinbase, it will automatically send it to your Block wallet, your hardware wallet. But the way I think of that, the only way that works is you have to share, or the wallet has to share with Coinbase, your XPub. And if that's done, there's privacy issues with that. That's something that doesn't really excite me in the end. I could be wrong in my approach here. Maybe they're using a single address and sending it to that, but even that's even worse in my opinion. Or maybe not.
Yeah,
worse.
It's bad. It's just as bad for sure.
Yeah. So like I'm looking at this, there's, I have to dive deep into this. It's still in beta for, you know, they're trying to, you know, you have to sign up for the beta and be one of the few fortunate people to get it sent to you. But on the surface, and from what I'm scratching here, it doesn't look all that great. I'm not going to recommend the Block Wallet in this current rendition, because if they're sharing the XPub with Coinbase, then screw that, man.
Yeah, So my understanding is that when I was signing up for the beta, they basically, the information that I got was you would have an app on your phone and you would get an actual hardware wallet. And then from the app, you could buy from whoever their partner exchanges were. And they're starting with Coinbase and of course Cash App, because Cash App is one of Block's own products. And so you purchase it, I guess, through the app, and then it goes straight to the hardware wallet. I'm hoping with Dorsey at the helm, they make some smarter decisions, but yeah, we will have to see. But again, it's at the end of the day, also, this is you're buying from regulated exchanges on an app that's produced by a regulated company that's got a bunch of closed source code running. So if you can get out of this, you can go to an open source project, use an open source wallet and buy from, let's not say an unregulated exchange, but let's say an exchange that you can trust without without government interference, then that's probably what's best.
Bull Bitcoin, use the gold card. Mark 3 is good. It doesn't have NFC Bluetooth. You're good to go. Mark 4 is just as good as well.
You got to get Bull down here in the US. I can't buy it. I can't use Bull.
I agree.
I can't go to my post office and buy Bitcoin.
We'll get Francis on the horn to see if we can make this a reality.
Well, Francis, when I forget if it was you or Joey interviewing him, he said that they can't come to the US because it's way overregulated here.
Yeah. There are a few exchanges that are slowly... Canadian exchanges that are slowly introducing themselves into the United States, and they're only able to do so in certain jurisdictions before they could expand further. So yeah, it's definitely a highly regulated market. Even though that they're publicly traded and within Canada, it's still, there's so many hurdles to jump if they want to enter the US market, which I guess it's good and bad depending on how you look at it. But I can't say much to it. You probably have more of insight than I do, and if you want to talk about it, go ahead. I don't know. This is, you know, it's more up your alley than mine because of
again, it's the regulation is a double-edged sword because there are a lot of people that get ripped off by a lot of different products. And so there is, I don't know, you could argue for sure that there is some room for regulation, but regulation is also in the US at least, and in most countries, I imagine, a very slippery slope. And so overreach comes quickly and then it never goes back. It only goes farther. So
yeah, agreed. And just wanted to give a shout out to Boomer. It looks like we have some spam in the chat and I can't get rid of it, but we'll have to deal with it. So Boomer does a Bitcoin meetup in Ottawa. It's high energy. They talk about energy too, but they talk about Bitcoin as well. So if you're in the Ottawa region, get in touch with Boomer on Twitter. Should I forget his Twitter handle off the top of my head, but just post it on that. I'll ram it off Boomer. So anyways, let's talk about Bitcoin wallets, and we're on the topic right now, but the analysis of it and Glassnode, they have done analysis on Bitcoin wallets and they have determined through their analysis that the number of Bitcoin wallets holding at least one BTC has hit an all-time high. That number being 1,008,000. So they crossed the 1 million mark back in May. So another 8,000 were gained in the last 2 months. So, I mean, it's a decent number in terms of the last 2 months, but given that it crossed a million just 2 months ago, there you go. By the way, Boomer's Twitter handle is the ruler's broken. There you go. The ruler's broken. That's his Twitter handle. Anyways, but back to the Glassnode story. So they crossed a 1 million threshold in terms of Bitcoin wallets holding one Bitcoin back in May. Now it's 1,008,000. So this is interesting because of note, there's an increased number of Bitcoin sent from miners to the exchanges as of the past little while. So for whatever reason, there are people out there that have accumulated Bitcoin and one Bitcoin and they are stuffing it in their wallet. So this is interesting, given the fact that a lot of Bitcoin has been mined and probably held by fewer individuals in the past. Now it seems to be more, dare I say, decentralized. So really interesting analysis here. And I don't know if maybe, you know, they say at least one Bitcoin for these wallets. Potentially, some people may hold multiple of these. So it could be one person holding multiple of these wallets. So in fact, it could be less people holding Bitcoin. They still could be kind of centralized in a way, but still very decentralized in the way the network is. But anyways, I'm looking at this and it seems very interesting analysis. I don't know what to make of this, but I'm not sure if you have anything you want to pipe in here. Just simply interesting that one Bitcoin is... that's the all-time high right now in terms of wallet addresses. So that's interesting stuff.
Yeah, I didn't see the exact analysis, but that's good, man. I think we had plenty of time to stack at 16K. I hope people took full advantage and I hope people became whole coiners. And once you start getting to that level too, I hope you do have multiple wallets. So hopefully there are a couple people that have a few Bitcoin that are spread across multiple wallets.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Mount Gox. You're familiar with this whole saga, right? So apparently there's going to be the repayment scheduling coming up and the deadline is approaching it in October. And in fact, it's going to be October 2023. For those who aren't aware, this is a Bitcoin exchange that was hacked back in 2014. I think the number was 850,000 was stolen from that exchange at the time. And that number, somewhere around the 3-5% of all the Bitcoin mined in totality. So it's a large number of Bitcoin that was stolen from that exchange at 2014. Anyways, they're going to be reimbursing around 142,000 Bitcoin as well as some Bitcoin Cash, but I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about BTC. So that 142,000 is going to be reimbursed to the users that were ultimately impacted as a result of this. So if you look at that number, that's approximately slightly less than the same number of Bitcoin that MicroStrategy owns. And every time MicroStrategy makes a purchase of Bitcoin, and you notice the price of Bitcoin spikes significantly, and enough that it's noticeable that you could actually look at the chart and say, hey, MicroStrategy bought here, here, and here. I'm wondering how much of this 142,000 that's going to be released to people is going to be sold. And if it is, how much downward pressure is this going to provide to the price of Bitcoin? And if it does, then there might be some really good buying opportunities moving forward. But on the flip side, could be some people that have invested all this time. They were in Bitcoin back in 2014, so they understand what it's all about. And they've seen the fiat system basically wreck itself in the process in the last 9 years. So maybe they're going to hold on to this. So I'm wondering if you have any analysis on this.
So yeah, how are they going to get the, how are they going to get it to them, to these users?
I don't know the mechanism. Maybe they have to provide a wallet address, and then the legal channels will ship the individual Bitcoins to the people that were impacted. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know enough about how they're going to distribute the actual Bitcoin. I mean, especially if it is per user based on how much each user lost, or do they all just get some set amount? Like, is it a class action lawsuit type thing? I don't know, but
I think they recovered what they could. Okay. So they recovered what they could. And so they're probably going to get a portion of what they lost, because 850,000 was the number I recall that was stolen. So they'll probably get whatever 142 divided by 850,000. That's the percentage you're going to get of the original Bitcoin that they had. So it's going to be a small portion.
But suppose you lost 10 Bitcoin and I lost 5 Bitcoin. Do you get twice as much as me on the distribution?
That's what I'm assuming. And okay. I don't have anything to justify this. This is just based on my assumption. And it seems fair. I hope that they do that process.
Yeah. Who knows? I bet a bunch of them just get it and exchange it for XRP or something. No. Okay. Dude, crash the price. I want to keep stacking, man.
What the hell happened with the SEC and that? I mean, I don't want to talk about what happened with Ripple or /XRP and SEC, but the fuck happened there? I thought for sure that was a slam dunk, but it wasn't. It didn't seem like it was definitive one way or another. They made a decision, and it's like it's half a security, it's half not. What they did with security were like, I don't know.
I don't understand how the token can be a security under some instances, but not a security under other instances. Here's my take on the whole thing with Ripple. And so XRP works on its own blockchain. It's like, it doesn't work through ETH or whatever. And What was it, last year or 2021? Ripple was running a bunch of tests to facilitate the development of a CBDC. And so I think they called it like a sandbox environment to test CBDCs. And so do you think the US government, who desperately wants to create a CBDC, really wants to destroy Ripple? I don't think so.
Ooh, I never thought of that angle. Maybe that's it. Try to digest that. I don't know what to say. I'm going to leave it at it.
To me, it's like, they've got, for a CBDC, they've got Ethereum and they've got Ripple. And, you know, it's like they're going to choose from one of those two things.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good topic for another time. Fuck, I need more time to think about that. Anyways, let's talk about Mutiny Wallet. And I know you were mentioning it earlier in the show. Now, I'm going to have a different take on this, I think. So bear with me. Because now the Mutiny Wallet beta is now open to the public. This is a self-custody wallet that runs in a browser. Now, this is the point I'm going to stress here, that runs in a browser. There has been lots of good press lately from this for the Mutiny beta, and people are very happy with this. In fact, they've been talking on Kevin Rook Show, Bitcoin Magazine, Bitcoin Review, Citadel Dispatch, just to name a few. And while I'm going to take a different approach than what a lot of people are saying, this, the way I'm looking at it, is really no different than other wallets like Wallet Satoshi in the fact that it's custodial. And I understand that they give you the option to connect to your own server, but the default, it is a Mutiny server. So you're relying on them to have everything. And if they want to rug pull you, they can. It, this is, from what I understand, it's a PWA, a progressive web app. And there is no offline functionality. It requires a connection to the Mutiny server or a server that you provide to work. Mm-hmm. And people, they believe that this is it's non-custodial wallet that just runs in your phone. So this is, they think it's non-custodial, but it is indeed custodial the way it is right now, at least in this default setting. It can be non-custodial, but those people need to do the process of self-hosting, and they'll need to download the front end and deploy on Cloudflare or something similar. And the core would need to be downloaded, compiled, and you will, quote, need to find your own way to import it into the front end, end quote. They're saying that Mutiny Wallet relies on multiple backend services to operate. Most of them are essential. Web apps, they increase the number of attacks that could happen. Web browsers notoriously are the easiest way to attack somebody. They're very utilitarian in their purpose. You could go on YouTube, you could go use that, you could read the news, you could do so many things with that. Using that for a wallet is not the best way of doing business. Having its own specific app, which I'm sure it's going to happen in the future, but it's a current rendition, I don't recommend it. I even tried to use this in Vanadium. That's a more secured version of Chrome. And I was not able to do it. I was not able to use it. So in a secured browser, you're unable to use Mutiny Wallet. What does that mean? I'm going to leave it to yourself to figure that out. So it doesn't lend any credibility, not say credibility, any, I'm not very happy with it. And so I think people that should, they should look at that and say, there may be something more to this. So in its current form, be very careful, because it is custodial in nature. Unless you change it, you're able to finagle this and make it self-custody. But even the way they're saying it, somehow you're going to have to work it and to find your own way to import it in your front end. So that sounds to me, there's going to be a lot of work on the back end for you to make this work. So I'm not too pleased with this. I'm not too happy with this, but I'm sure other people have a different view than mine. But I think actually most people have a different view than mine. What are your thoughts on it?
No, it's a good take. And I think at the end of the day, I'm happy to see that there are just more participants in the marketplace of wallets. This is a wallet I'm not going to use. I saw that it was released during the Lightning Summit last week. And I think Marty and Odell were talking about it on their latest rabbit hole recap. And I don't know, look, man, Cold Card plus Sparrow is just so easy. It's such an easy setup for a wallet that I don't know why anyone uses anything else, but it is great to see. It's great to see more participants, like I said, in the wallet marketplace. And the other thing I do like about Mutiny is that it's all open source software. So, as people play with it and realize where the vulnerabilities and bugs are, they've got the option to go in there and actually start to create some shit on their own. And so that is one good thing about it. I wouldn't recommend to anybody using any new product just because you want to get a couple versions down the road before you actually, I do the same thing with software updates. It's like, I'm going to wait until there's a stable release before I start using it. If you do end up using Mutiny and test it, then do it with a very small number of sats.
That's good advice. And anything that is new, be very careful with using it, especially if you're going to park your wealth on it. And not to say that anybody would want to park a lot of their wealth on something like Mutiny, because, Lightning, it's more transactional day-to-day stuff. But be very careful when anything is just released. Give it some time. Give it some time to mature and find out if there's been any bugs that have been reported in the system, worked out, and gives you some confidence in the product. And, that's actually really good advice, and just in general.
I don't know where their code is. The code hosted on GitHub? Do you know?
I believe it is, because when they're talking about downloading the server, the back end and the front end, it's from GitHub. So I think you are correct. Is there? Yeah.
Yeah. So you can go on GitHub too and actually look at the code and report bugs and things like that. I'm sure that the team is very small, as most of these teams are, and it's hard to give them funding. So a lot of them, I'm guessing, the developers probably also have full-time jobs. So
agreed.
It's like any new product. It's definitely going to have faults, and you just have to be careful with it.
And I don't want to shit on it too much. I'm just saying, in its current form, I just don't recommend it. It could develop into something much bigger and better, But I just want to state that the way it is right now, the way the servers are set up, a default web app, many things that I doesn't really rub me the wrong way.
It's one of these. It's actually very similar to SimpleX, this chat app that Dorsey's been pushing pretty hard on Twitter now. This has come up especially in the past week because the terms of service for Telegram have changed, where Telegram's now collecting your IP. And so I think Dorsey's pushing this SimpleX. And it's similar to Mutiny in that it is decentralized if you want it to be. So you can connect it to your own servers or you can use the SimpleX servers. And I'm guessing that 99% of people that would sign up for it would just end up using the SimpleX servers because it's much easier. And I think people in Bitcoin often underestimate how much people value simplicity. Like, you say there's a million people that own one Bitcoin in a wallet. How many people do you think run full nodes? It's definitely not a million.
Oh, so. Yeah. That's a really good question. You're right. It has to be a lesser amount. That's a really good question. Yeah. Off the top of my head, I can't even, you could get the number for Lightning nodes. And I know that there's going to be no direct correlation between full Bitcoin nodes and Lightning nodes. But with that, you might be able to extrapolate how many Bitcoin nodes there are out there, because you could look, it's publicly known through analysis how many Lightning nodes are out there. So if you could figure it out, maybe for every 10,000 Lightning nodes, for every 10,000 Bitcoin nodes, there'll be one Lightning node. Maybe you could do some analysis to figure that out. I don't know. I'd love to dive deep into that. That's a good question. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I just think we are, like, a lot of people in Bitcoin, and it is, once you get these things up and running, like running a full node is really not that difficult. You can use something like Citadel and it's actually very simple. It just takes a few days to sync the blockchain and then you're good to go. But I think we often underestimate how simple people are used to products being and how quickly they'll give up on products that aren't simple. So if you give people the choice of connecting to their own server or the choice of making it easy and just connecting to a company's server, most people, in my opinion, are just going to connect to the company's servers and you're going to end up in the same position we've always been in.
Agreed. And this is an opportunity to suggest to people out there, if you have the means to buy the storage requirement that's necessary to run your own node, do that. And it's recommended at least 1 terabyte hard drive, but I would suggest even larger, 2 terabytes, just to be future-proofing yourself. Yep. Because the way things are growing with the Bitcoin blockchain, it's especially with all these ordinals being put on there, it may cross the 1 terabyte threshold sooner than we anticipated. So, and there's lots of benefits from running your own node. When you broadcast your transactions, you could do so yourself. You're not relying on a different node to do that. So everything is much more controlled by you. Plus, if you ever want to do any checking out on a blockchain explorer, you could do so yourself with your own node. So you don't have to rely on a third party, which could be snooping what you're searching for. So there's lots of benefits from running your own node. Definitely consider it. And a VPN is another thing I want to suggest. You mentioned Telegram collecting IPs. It's a good opportunity to suggest to run a VPN. And if they are collecting IPs and you have a VPN, at least you have some sort of protection from that. It's just any VPNs that you have that you want to recommend. I use Mulvad personally. How about you?
I use Proton. When you sign up for Proton Mail, you can get a VPN. And here's the problem, though, is like there's a lot of apps that just won't work if you're on a VPN, especially on iOS. They can detect these VPNs really easily, especially the major VPN companies. And some apps just will stop working. If they detect,
there's only one website that gave me a hard time for using a VPN, and I use it for my computer. Like, in fact, right now it's on a VPN, a website I don't use very much, and it's to do with creating the YouTube Shorts. And other than that, nothing else gives me a problem for my phone or my laptop. So
interesting.
I got to transition you over to a Graphene OS phone. It's about time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I absolutely need to, but I wonder too, if you're using I didn't catch the name of the company you said for the VPN, but I actually had way more problems when I was using ExpressVPN than when I switched to Proton. And so I kind of wonder if ExpressVPN is just so well known, like which clusters they use, which servers they use, that apps are able to easily detect that it's a VPN. Whereas maybe like Proton is a little less detectable.
So Mulvad is the one I use, and you could pay with Bitcoin with that. So I don't have much experience with other ones, so maybe this is better than the other ones. I don't know, but give that a shot. It may be better than Proton with getting without getting
Boomer saying Pokemon Go with a VPN.
I was laughing at that. So yeah, so if you're using Pokemon Go, a VPN is buggy. Is it just a heads up with that? So yeah, you won't be able to collect your Pokemon. And he's also asking Boomer his opinions on pruned nodes. And for me, there is, you know, there's a usage for it if you don't have enough space, as long as it's not pruned back so far that it's totally useless. Sorry, so close to the current date, it's not totally useless. As long as it's far enough back that you're still able to look at transactions. So there is a purpose to use a prune node, but really, if you're going to do it, you might as well go all out. Spend the money on a hard drive, a solid state drive, actually. So I'm old school with the hard drive talk. A solid state drive that is at least 1 terabyte, potentially two or more, and you're good to go. But what are your thoughts on a prune node?
I really haven't done it. I thought about doing it. I think you and I actually talked about this a while ago when the Ordinals thing was first starting to blow up, and I considered it, but I was actually in the process of moving, and I was, you know, I had my node unplugged and wasn't really doing much anyway. So I haven't given it much thought. So yeah, I'll keep my opinions to myself because they're not very well.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. So the last story I want to talk about, unless you want to bring anything else up with Bitcoin related news, is the SEC has charged and arrested Celsius's Alex Mashinsky with fraud, yeah, and the unregistered offer and sale of securities. And they're saying that Celsius lied to investors by presenting itself as a safe investment opportunity and a chance to gain financial freedom. But behind the scenes, the company operated a failing business model and took significant risk with investor crypto assets. It's straight from the SEC. I'm just reading this for you. So Mashinsky actually pleaded not guilty in a Manhattan federal court.
Oh, of course.
You're not going to say he said he's guilty. He's screwed, because the reason why he and his co-defendant Roni Cohen Pavon face decades in prison. So he's going to fight this tooth and nail, obviously. And which is funny, because Saifedean was on a panel with him not too long ago, a few years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago, with McCormack, Tone Bays, if I recall correctly.
Yeah,
Mashinsky was there, and Saifedean was just asking like the yield part and just questioning it. And it was a wonderful exchange. And that aged oh so well, that video. But yeah. Anyways, what's interesting is this is something that's outside of all this. Celsius has agreed to pay $4.7 billion with a B settlement to the Federal Trade Commission. So that's a different department than the SEC. The settlement announced by the FTC will not be paid until the company is able to return what remains of customer assets in bankruptcy proceedings. So they may get $0 from all this. It's just a truly incredible story.
When they collapsed, they had something like $28 billion worth of assets on their balance sheet. And I think, how much did they end up actually owning? Like $1.2 billion or something. Wasn't it like a crazy, crazy amount?
What were the liabilities to the credit bankruptcy? I don't know. I'm not sure if you want to add anything to this story. I mean, I'll just leave it at that if you're okay with it. But if you want to go ahead and run with it, go ahead.
Here's a little note that I have, because I of course had this in my pre-show notes too. Do you know what so it's the second largest fine from the FTC. Do you know what the first, like the largest ever was?
It was a bank, $5 billion. I forget the bank.
It wasn't a bank. It was Facebook,
but $5 billion. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, and it was a privacy issue related to that. Cambridge Analytica, that scandal.
Were they stealing users' data and passing it off?
Yeah, yeah. They weren't stealing it. Like users were just giving it to them, but they weren't telling users how it was being distributed. So yeah, $5 billion. Do you know what the largest fine from the FTC was before that $5 billion fine?
I couldn't even guess the number or who had it.
It was Google. it was 22 million. So we went from 22.
That's a difference.
In 2012, yeah,
so that's 22 million for you.
Yeah,
you gotta scrub the M's, put a B, and away you go. So
yeah,
holy shit.
Yeah, I was there. You go. When I saw it.
So if anybody wants to know what the real cost of inflation is, take a look to see what are the fines from the
FTC fines.
So that's it that I have from Bitcoin related news. Wayfaring, if you want to bring up anything that is pertinent, that is noteworthy, you know, go ahead.
If not,
we can transition. It's your choice.
Yeah, well, let's transition. I think the only other stuff I had written down here was this XRP stuff, and then I think that's about it. Oh, some of this, I think there's a news story about some Silk Road funds being moved. Let's just move on. I don't think these are
all right stories. Well, let's go to Clown World News, and it's actually we're making decent time. We're about on schedule. A Chicago suburb, they're starting to make $25,000 payments out for some of their citizens out there because, well, they think this is the right thing to do. And they believe this is going to be a test run for the whole country. And so this is the city of Evanston. They already paid out 16 locals from a $10 million package that was first approved in 2019. This is for people that were living in the city back in between 1919 and 1969. And so back then, apparently, there were some issues with some of the residents over there, some maybe racist policies. So maybe that's the wrong wording, but I'm going to use that as they didn't treat people equally. Let's just go along those lines. So they're going along this way to start paying people to make them feel whole. And so to qualify, you have to be at least 18 and living in the city between 1919 and 1969. So I'm assuming you have to be 18 to have. So they qualify of at least 18. So maybe they think they identify as somebody that's 17. But anyways, so no word if they will accept applications for those living in the city outside of that. So some people are complaining that this is just too stringent. It's, you know, setting a hard number in 1969. They should extend it. But anyways, this $10 million fund was initially supposed to come from tax cash from legal marijuana sales. So interestingly enough, they didn't raise enough money to meet this $10 million. So now they're taking money from the real estate transfer tax money with properties that are worth more than $1 million. So of note, the city itself has a total debt of $382.9 million. Even their deficit for the year of 2022 is $10.3 million, and their deficit for 2023 is projected to be $11.5 million. So with all this debt that they have, with all the deficit that they have annually that's accumulating to the debt, they're willing to pay out this $10 million to the people. And I understand people might have been, or probably were, impacted at that time, but there's not enough money to go around, and this is adding on to this debt is just going to create a bigger problem down the road. This might help out some people temporarily right now, but in the long run, this is going to wreck a lot more people. And I'm not sure if you saw this story, if you have any thoughts on this.
This is par for the course. Where is this, you said, Chicago?
Just outside of Chicago, Chicago suburb called Evanston.
Yeah, this is par for the course. Print money, give it to people thinking that, you know, the people are happy. Like, look, man, 50 years ago, if you experienced racism in the city, do you really think getting 25 G's right now is going to make you feel whole? Or are you going to give them that money and they're going to say, all right, everything's forgiven, I won't complain anymore, I'm not going to ask for anything else? No, of course not. And to the larger point here, when you just print this money, like, it's not being covered by taxes. They don't just look at our federal deficit, look at each city's deficit. This shit's insane, man. They did the same thing during COVID. They printed trillions of dollars. They gave you $2,000, and now you're stuck with well, what was it? Our CPI print was 3%, but if you take it back, I don't know, 10 years, it's something like 40%. So yeah, they print a bunch of money, they give you $2,000, and now you're stuck with prices that are 20% higher.
Yeah.
Stupid. Yeah. It's absolutely stupid. We're run by absolute morons.
Well, the money flows uphill, and when people get money, and I'm not trying to generalize here, but the reality is everybody, when they get money, they have to spend it on the goods and services they need to live, right? And when they do that, the ones that are providing this, they're the ones that are going to be collecting the money in the end. So if you're going to be buying groceries from a grocery store or whatever, the grocery store itself is going to reap the rewards from the profit. Or if you buy some goods from Amazon for stuff you need, well, Jeff Bezos is going to be getting some of the money in the end. So ultimately, money does flow up way uphill, and it goes to the big people that have it. And so when you cut checks to people, the little people that, are going to be using it, that money eventually is going to end in the pockets of the very rich. And it's
Also, it's not just the rich, right? I have no problem with Bezos. I think Amazon's a pretty good product. I like having things shipped to my door in 2 days. But what I don't like are the people that are like, whatever agency came up with this idiotic idea, I'm sure it's filled with a bunch of administrators who are doing very important things and think that they need six-figure government salaries. And so what'd they get? 10 million? They gave it to 16 people. And my guess is they'll give it to four more. They'll call it a failure because they didn't get enough money. They'll get another 20 million. And these administrators and these government officials will just make off like fat cats. This is how you get people in Congress that are worth hundreds of millions of dollars, $100,000 a year salary.
It drives me absolutely bonkers when, that happens. And the people that are able to take advantage, I mean, we've got some word today about something which happened with politicians in Canada. I don't want to get into the specifics of it, but really when you have perception, I'm going to be very generalized here. If there's perception of somebody that has insider information and can benefit from that, and the rest of the people suffer as a result of that, it looks really, really bad. And it's hard to defend the position, but at the time, and once it happens, and once you accumulate all this money, all that really happens is a slap on the wrist at best. And it's like, don't do this again. And of course, it gets done and again and again and again. I mean, Pelosi is famously known for her trades, and her husband is he does very, very, very well in the trades. For some reason, he's always in the, well, mostly in the right side of these trades. And how is this done? Time and time again. We can only assume. I'm not saying that he has insider information, but the perception is, you know, that
and he owes the Fight Club at his place in California too. So don't forget about that.
That I don't want to get into that, but you know, I just want to go back to that Chicago suburbs story, and I'm wondering if anybody that identifies as living between 1919 and 1969, are they eligible? Does it simply you have to have lived there, or does the identification of living through that time, is that sufficient enough to get payment? I'd love to know an answer to that question. But
you would need, I'm not sure what you would need to solve that. You would definitely have to hire a couple more people on the administration to do some research into that.
We'll have to get some high priced jobs just to justify to everything. But anyways, let's move on about Brazil. We don't talk about them too much in the show, so it's very you should be honored the fact that we're getting one of these Brazil stories while you're here. They have a CBDC that looks like it's going to be coming out sometime in the future. I don't know what's the story, how much longer before a retail CBDC is going to be coming out, but somebody has done some research on their CBDC that's going to be potentially rolled out, and it seems to be that the government has the ability to freeze funds and adjust balances. Who the heck could have predicted this? It's not like Bitcoiners have been saying this since day one, but here we go. So this gentleman by name of Pedro Magalhães, sorry if I butchered the Portuguese version of your name. He's the founder of a Web3 consulting firm, Yora Labs. He reviewed the API published by the Monetary Authority on its GitHub. So this is actually on GitHub. You can check it out right from the central bank. And in it, they have, quote, freeze or arrest amounts, end quote, within the CBC system. You know, we've been talking about this numerous times. You give this ultimate authority, which they already have, but now you're making it even more, you give them even more power, even more control. It's for those who are unaware, Bitcoin operates in a proof of work environment. And I hope, but if people are not aware, Ethereum runs in a proof of stake environment. That's pretty shitty. That is shitty. But even worse than that is a proof of authority. And that is a CBDC. A proof of authority is you have centralized nodes, one or a few of them that are strategically placed within the country. And these proof of authority nodes have the ultimate ability to do whatever they want. Freeze, decrease, increase, whatever they want. It can be done through simple clicks and that's it. We've been talking about this so fucking long on this show. And this is an example. Freezing funds and adjusting balances. I mean, DeSantis is saying that he's against CBDCs. He's the only one out there. Am I wrong? Maybe RFK Jr. Is he also saying that too? I could be wrong. Anyways, this is shitty stuff, and it's all shady stuff to me. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, another chalk up another W for the conspiracy theorists and Bitcoin, because we're spot on about this. And it's just so obvious that they'll do this kind of stuff. They'll not only freeze your account and take what you have in your account at will, but they'll also tell you what you can and cannot buy with your CBDC. They'll tell you how far away from your house you're allowed to buy things with your CBDC. This is par for the course. I think they're going to do the same thing with electric vehicles, really any computerized vehicle. They can shut it down at will. Hey, it's Tuesday, or you've met your carbon quota for the month, so you can't drive. You met your meat quota for the month, so you can't purchase steaks with your CBDC. This is all stuff that is not only possible, it's extraordinarily likely that they'll do. And for people that think that that's any kind of slippery slope argument, you haven't been paying attention. These are things they're saying them out loud at this point, that they want to do these things. So yeah, it's horrible stuff. I think we're already pretty close to a CBDC. We're still allowed to use cash in the US, but as soon as you run out of cash, the banks can very easily not process a withdrawal for you. Very, very easily. All they have to do is say, we don't trust that you're who you say you are, or give you some other completely BS reason for not giving you cash when you go to withdraw it. So yeah. And now most of the ATMs in the US now also have like a virtual teller. And so if you go to them and try to withdraw cash, like someone will actually pop up on a screen and make you verify your identity. So we're already very close to a CBDC, much closer than people realize, but full-blown CBDC will be another level of tyranny.
You know what? I never knew that there's a virtual teller that's built into programming for the ATMs over there, at least to ones that I visit over here in Canada. And, you know, obviously I never get out of the basement, so I don't have much of much information about this, but that's rather interesting. But go ahead.
I was just going to say, when SVB collapsed, I immediately went to the bank. I don't use SVB, but I use a national bank, and I immediately went to the bank and was going to withdraw cash, just because I thought that the cascading event was going to be much worse than it was. And it probably should have been much worse than it was. Like, it's still shocking to me that people just kind of rolled on from that story. But yeah. I went to withdraw cash, and the bank that I went to had a virtual teller, and they told me to use that to make the withdrawal, and the ATM wouldn't process my withdrawal. Now, fortunately, there was a real teller in the bank, and I was able to get my money out. But here's the thing about automation. Eventually, those physical tellers are going to go away, because the wages that they need are going to exceed what they're worth to the bank. And there's only going to be a virtual teller. And when the virtual teller doesn't give you the money that you want, then what? What are you going to do? There's nothing you can do about it other than commit a felony and try to break into the ATM, right? So that's why I think we're already pretty close to a CBDC. I think
you bring up a really good point. You bring up a great point. Like, once they start to get rid of these human tellers and replace them with totality with a digital version, and you have issues with getting your money out for whatever reason, it could be a technical glitch, or it could be that they're stopping your account for one way or another. Yeah, you're kind of left out to dry, and there's no way to rectify that. That's a really good.
There's nothing you can do. There's absolutely nothing you can do, and there's no one there that's under any sort of. There's no one there to feel, you know, empathy or threat from you for not giving you your money. So there's really nothing you can do. What are you gonna do? Here's an 800 number you can call, and you can wait for 4 hours for someone to tell you that there's nothing they can do.
Have you seen the story about Bank of America stopping, or some people having issues with their bank accounts being closed, especially people that are in the Bitcoin community? I've seen this a few times on Twitter in the past little while. It wasn't noteworthy enough for me to really dive deep into this, but I'm wondering if you heard about this, specifically
because of the United States. I saw Brian Armstrong posted a poll about asking Coinbase users whether their accounts with Bank of America were frozen. And I think a lot of people said yes, but who knows? I don't know. I haven't been able to verify any of that.
Okay.
And you're right. Bank of America or Coinbase.
And you're right. It was like Coinbase users, I believe, that were impacted. But anyways, let's move on. Credit Suisse, and we were just talking, you were just actually mentioning about banks that failed not too distant patch of SVB for one, which by the way, SVB has the same letters as BSV, just in a different order. So it was easy to fail.
Well, but, this is a crazy thing. Sorry, I just...
No, go on. I'm curious.
That was 6 months ago that a major bank in the US failed and was bailed out in less than 6 months ago. And
yeah,
everybody has just completely moved on from it. That's insane.
Yeah, it's not just them. First Republic,
yep.
Credit Suisse.
Yep.
These are big institutions. And life goes on. We're not even...
Nothing's changed.
Right? There was a period of time. It was like almost a bank a week. Or it seemed like there was a bank a week that was capitulating. And I don't know.
Nothing changed. Nothing changed. They got bailed out by the government, or major banks stepped in and bought smaller banks. And none of the policies that led to these bank failures have changed. The fractional reserve banking system mm-hmm. is still going strong. And when you tell people this stuff, they look at you like you're a lunatic. I don't think
you know what the fractional reserve requirement in Canadian banks are.
I don't know. What is it? 3% less? 2%?
A big fat zero. They changed that zero. Decades ago.
So they don't need zero. Any cash. They don't need anything on hand.
Correct. That's incredible. That's
insane, man.
Yeah. So that's a recipe that's... Anyways. But you know what? Sadly, I mean, with respect to Credit Suisse, we're not going to find out for half a century until find out exactly what happened. I'll tell you why. This company... For those who are unaware that we're living under a rock, it capitulated earlier this year. It was one of the banks that just simply couldn't handle the financial strain of what's been going on. Well, now their files are going to remain secret for 50 years. An investigation commission in Switzerland is going to give the files to the Swiss Federal Archives. Usually they hold these things for 30 years, but in this case, they made an exception, 50 years. Now, the investigation will focus that's currently underway and eventually will be put away for archives for half a century, is going to focus on the activities of the Swiss government, financial regulators, the central bank during the run-up of the emergency takeover of Credit Suisse back in March. This was a publicly traded company, and it had to have been taken over by another company. I forget the name of it. But anyways, the Swiss National Bank, the central bank, I forget their name, was also involved there too. So the Swiss citizens were impacted as well, because this is going to impact the Swiss franc. So citizens, shareholders, users, all alike wrecked as a result. Why would they even consider putting this and mothballing it for 50 years? If there's something there that should be known, this should be made publicly known, not put away. It seems like to me, I don't want to say this is conspiratorial, but why would they hide anything like this? This is something that should be easily publicly viewed as a way for other banks, for anybody out there to try to avoid this mistake to happen again, but also give a red light for people to understand that if there's a bank operating under this environment, similar to what Credit Suisse was doing, that they should react, maybe take their money out, put in another bank or into Bitcoin or under their mattress. So there's a lot of different options, but this reeks of like just hiding fucking something that shouldn't be hidden. Like, did you hear about this?
I didn't, but I'm not surprised. This is the bullshit system that we live in. If you as a citizen do something that the government deems inappropriate, you have 30 days to show them everything that you have. They do a complete audit of you. You've got to show them everything. When they do shit, they lost what, $6.2 billion the U.S. government to Ukraine goes unaccounted for, and nothing. Meanwhile, if I send $601 to a friend of mine over Venmo, I need to report it to the government, or I'm considered, you know, a criminal. So this is just a bullshit system that we live in, and this is what they do to hide it. And by the way, 50 years is going to go by, and they won't open any of these. They'll continue it. They did the same thing. I mean, look, the U.S. had a president. We don't have to go too far into this because we want to keep CBP pumping hard on YouTube. But we still have files that go unreleased from something major that happened in the U.S.
Are you talking about maybe an assassination of a president?
Yeah, that's hypothetically the assassination of a president.
But several presidents potentially
by agencies within the government itself. And we still have all of that stuff is still sealed tight and won't come out. And it was supposed to come out, what, at this point, it's supposed to come out like 10 different times, and they just keep pushing it back. So they're going to do the same thing here. This is how they keep their secrets. This is why we should be striving towards systems that are completely open source, auditable by everybody, so that we can avoid this kind of stuff.
100%. Now, on a side note here, RFK Jr., do you think he's got a bullseye on him, given
yes.
what he's doing?
Oh, yes, absolutely, I do.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't wish any ill will upon anybody, especially him. But you know what? Just looking at the nature of what he's talking about, he's trying to go against the establishment. And then throwing into the mix here, everything that's happened to his clan. And it's like, man, oh, yeah, man.
It's very sad. I disagree with RFK Jr. on a number of different issues. But I am, what I like about him and what I like about anybody that's willing to stick their neck out publicly is that they come seemingly with a genuine open mind, and they're willing to discuss things. And that's all you can ask for. We're in this system now where people are unwilling to discuss things and even hide them, which is related to the story that you just shared. Yeah, it's bullshit, man. That's public information. The taxpayers ultimately paid for all of that, and they should have access to that. Like, public officials, they should have public data. Private citizens, their data should be private. Instead, private citizens are forced to make their data public, and public employees get to maintain the secrecy. It's the exact inverse of how our society is supposed to function.
Yeah, well put. Let's move on to the national debt, the U.S. federal national debt. The budget deficit report was released this past week, and the U.S. has paid an astonishing amount of $652 billion in interest year to date. That's up 25% year over year. And it looks like, based off this, it's going to surpass the $1 trillion just for servicing the debt on an annual basis. This will be the first time in history. And of note, government spending is also up 15% in the month of June. So interest, paying the interest is going up, because obviously interest rates are going up. But then you're also tacking on more debt. So it's a double-edged sword there. Then you have more spending that's being pumped into the system there. Then this is not just those two. It's a three-pronged attack, because now you have tax revenues that are down in June 9.2% year over year. So the it went down from $461 billion last year in June to $418 billion this year. So taking in less money, spending more, rates up. So interest rates, so spending the service national debt is up. Everything looks fucking shit on this. And then they're trying to sprinkle in a little bit more to this, that Biden now wants to cancel $39 billion in student loans for more than 804,000 borrowers. this thing from A to Z is fucking nuts. I mean, this is more up your alley. You live it, you breathe it. This is your government. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm sure part of the tax revenue decline is unemployment. Whatever unemployment rate they're feeding us is complete bullshit. I know a number of people who are in very well-paying jobs that are unemployed and can't find a similar job. They're taking like much, much, much lower pay. So I'm sure that has a big part of that. But it doesn't really matter, because the government never collects more money than it spends. They always spend more money than they make in tax revenue. And so you end up with an ever-increasing debt, and then they've got to service the interest on that debt, which just grows and grows and grows. If you were running a household on this kind of budget, you'd be homeless in, I don't know, a month, 2 months, whatever, however long it takes for the bank to repossess your property, is how long you'd have your house. And now they want to print more money to continue war efforts in countries that I don't think we should be in. They want to print more money to do things like hand out to people that were potentially oppressed 50, 60 years ago. They want to print more money to, as you mentioned, relieve student loan Debt. Let me tell you something about student loans, by the way. They wanted to forgive, what was the last bill wanted to forgive like $10,000 of student debt for everybody, for each borrower, for each federal borrower?
Something like that. But wasn't it tiered? If you were earning a certain amount, you weren't subjected to it, or it could be wrong.
Oh, maybe. I don't know what the exacts were, but let me tell you something. For the last 3 years in this country, we haven't had to pay, like they've been deferred. Student loans have been deferred. So they're not gained, and there's no interest being gained. So borrowers didn't have to make payments and interest was set to zero. I have to imagine that the amount that people were quote unquote forgiven because of that zero interest over that amount of time. And they're still on zero, by the way, I think until October. I have to imagine that per individual exceeds $10,000. And there's no way it doesn't. So the student loan forgiveness has already happened. People didn't see $10,000 get deducted from their balance, but I'm sure that the amount of interest that wasn't accumulated amounts to about $10,000 per person. We could actually do the math if we wanted to figure out if that's the case, but the student loan thing's insane. And one thing that isn't being brought up as a potential solution to student loans is to stop giving people so much damn money when they're 18 years old and have no idea what they want to do with their lives. So in the US, when you turn 18, you can fill out a FAFSA and they'll tell you how much money you qualify for and they'll typically give it to you. And I don't want to tell my age here, but it's been a long time since I've had to fill out a FAFSA form, but I don't recall it even asking me what I plan to study. You basically just put in your parents' income and your social security number and they tell you that you've qualified for X number of dollars and then you take it out. And I took out student loans. I went through a lot of schooling. I took out student loans and I took full advantage of the last 3 years and I've paid off the vast majority of what I owed because I took out the money. It's my responsibility. I feel that I have a moral obligation to pay back debts that I owe. And so that's the approach I took. But then you'll see all sorts of people that didn't take advantage of it complaining that they're not going to get this $10,000. And I don't think they even understand themselves that they actually got more than $10,000 forgiven by having no interest for that amount of time.
So this student loan thing, as you mentioned, October is when it's up. There's no way they're going to be reinstating it. They're going to kick this down the road, just kick can down the road and continually keep it 0%. Politically, it doesn't.
This is what they'll do, Len. I mean, they put up bills like this, like the one that you just mentioned, and then they say, well, you didn't forgive that amount, so I'm going to just to try to give you as much alleviation as possible, I'm going to just extend the interest pause. We couldn't get you $10,000 off, but we're going to extend the interest pause. But the net result is the same.
It's not sent to the institution. Like when you apply, forgive me if I got this wrong, but the way I understand it is once the application is filed and approved, the money is given to the student directly and it's up to them to deal with. So I'm wondering how much money that students were given. And, you know, you get a good chunk of money at an early age. You don't have the experience and the know-how and you're a little bit immature compared to what somebody would be later in life. I'm wondering how many people took that money and did something else besides use it for education.
And I hope when you're 20 years old, you're not going to know how to spend money. Is that what you think?
Yeah. I don't want to paint people with this with one brush, but I'm kind of hoping in a way that they put it on something like put in the stock market, made money and then took it out and they're better off. But
no,
I
have a feeling that's not the case. That's illegal. You're not allowed. Yeah. Yep.
How can they find out? Is there a way that
I don't know how they could find out, but I remember when I was doing some of my graduate studies, I actually talked to a friend about doing this because I qualified for way, way, way more than I needed. And I thought about just taking out the maximum and putting it into the stock market. And we found out that it was illegal to do that. Yeah.
And this carries with you even if you declare bankruptcy, right?
Well, you have to it would actually be pretty easy, I guess, for the IRS to find out because that income has to come from somewhere and you do have to declare on your taxes. So I guess you could just lie on your taxes, but you have to declare on your taxes if you received any.
You walk a lot of dogs.
Yeah. You could lie.
1,000 dogs. Right. Like yeah. I Uber like nuts. Nobody knows.
This was actually right when Uber was starting. I remember there was one Uber driver in the town that I was going to school in. So
The story is like
they would know. They would know if they would know because there's only one Uber driver and it wasn't me.
I could tell you some good stories off the air. But anyways, the last story I want to mention here, this personifies Clown World to a T. And I'm going to go over to the UK. Home dentistry. So people are now doing home dentistry over there, and it's a thing in the UK. So there's reports of people over in the UK that are resorting to pulling their own teeth out with pliers because they can't access dentists through the National Health Services, the NHS, over there. And this is due to a lack of availability of dentists, as well as the high cost for private dental care. So
let me tell you something. I've seen people from the UK. Whatever system they had in place for dentistry wasn't working to begin with. So I'm glad
this could be an improvement.
Yeah.
So it's a measurable number. A YouGov poll found that more than 10%, so more than 1 in 10 people, have attempted DIY dentistry in the last year. This basically just, it's in a nutshell, Clown World, truly fiat. I don't know. I have nothing else to say about this, but hopefully it improves, as you were mentioning, the smiles of the people in the UK.
No offense to the people over in the UK. I've got some good friends over there, and they don't all have jacked up teeth, but somehow that's how they're portrayed.
we'll leave it at that. And you know what? It's getting late in the show. I'm just going to transition over to the, because I don't want to talk too much on the Canadian side of things. We just go right to Bitcoin or no coiner section of the show. I have a no coiner, no Bitcoiner. Do you happen to have anybody that you want to bring up for either of the two?
I completely forgot to even think about this, Len, but I have a Bitcoiner.
Oh, we haven't had a Bitcoiner week in a while. Who's your Bitcoiner of the week?
I'm going to go with Jack Dorsey. I've been super bullish on everything Dorsey's been talking about. Maybe he's more of a Noster of the week because he's been talking a lot more about Noster than about Bitcoin. Yes. But I think he's doing cool stuff, and he's been on a number of different podcasts in the last few weeks. And so I've been enjoying hearing a little bit more insight. He was on with Russell Brand, and he was on with Jack Mahler's recently too. And so he provided a lot of insight about what went wrong with Twitter and about how many of those issues are solved with something like Noster. And so I highly recommend those podcasts. Maybe he's Noster of the week. So you'll go another week without a Bitcoin of the week. That.
Yeah. It was funny that the board of Twitter, before it was purchased by Elon Musk, it was made up with a whole bunch of people that had almost no skin in the game in comparison to other board members of different companies where they had like very little ownership of the company. So they didn't really care about the direction of the company because whatever happened to it, it didn't impact their pocketbook. So, I mean, I know this is a totally different topic altogether. Just what you're mentioning just reminds me of what the mess of Twitter, what it used to be like before Elon Musk purchased it. Even now, it's still kind of a disaster.
Even still a nightmare. But I don't know. One of the things Jack did mention in one of the podcasts was that he tried on multiple occasions to get Elon to join the board, and the board always turned it down.
Could you imagine? They didn't want him, then he fucking buys them out.
Yeah.
That's the old
fuck you. Yeah, yeah. And then they said no, and then they sued him to make sure he did do it. So yeah, the whole thing is a mess. It still is a mess. But I think it going private is look, it sucks, man. I think I'm with you in saying that Noster is the way forward for social media.
Yeah, it's definitely rough around the edges. Don't get me wrong. Using it, it's not as crisp and clean as Twitter. Just keep in mind that a year ago, it wasn't even there. So it's come a very long way in a very short period of time.
The beautiful thing about Noster compared to Twitter, or what did Meta just do, Threads or Instagram or Facebook, is that if you see something on Noster that you don't like, you can start to code, and even if you don't start to code, you can go into a GitHub repository and list bugs or list suggestions and actually have conversations about an open source project. You can't do that with Twitter, especially if you don't have a blue check. You can't tag Elon and say, hey, this is broken. I tried to do that last week. I was trying to create a new account for this project I'm working on, some social handles. And for like 3 weeks, I couldn't create a new Twitter account either on desktop or on the app. I just kept getting error messages, and they were nondescript error messages. So I finally got it to work yesterday on desktop, but on mobile, it's still broken. It's not good to have an app where you can't create a new account.
That's and not going to help. Setting up a new account on Nostr is so easy. Super simple. And I know it's
just a key pair.
I can't speak enough about it. Anyways, I'll talk about my no coiner of the week. And her name is Teresa Ribera. Does this name ring a bell to you at all?
Nothing.
Okay. She's the Spanish Minister of Ecological Transition. And as I talk about the story, maybe it will clue a bell. The name, nobody was talking about her. It was more the action which she did. Well, she traveled all the way to the European Union's climate summit in July.
Yeah, okay, I know who it is. I know who you're talking about.
So Senora Ribera was there, and she was going to obviously talk about climate and how it impacted Spain and so forth. The reason why I'm bringing this up is the mode in which she used to travel. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the private jet she took to get there. I'm not talking about the chauffeured cars, four of them, from what I understand, that took her from the airport of the private jet that she took over there to the summit. No, no. It's more the fact just before she arrived at the summit, she decided to hop out and hop on a bicycle and pedal her way for the last 100 meters or so for a photo op to show that she is so environmentally friendly and good for the environment. I see this shit so fucking often. And every time it happens, it fucking boils my blood. And it's not it's not a one-off. Like, as I say, this happens so many fucking times. And they always talk about net zero. And honestly, I don't think it's what it is, what they tell it to be. I think net zero means we use less, so they use more. We change our lifestyle. We ensure that we use less carbon to make sure that it offsets that they could use more carbon and their lifestyle has not been changed or will not change moving forward. So every time I see these type of actions, it's such a fiat move, and it just simply just taking pictures and trying to make themselves look good. I even did some research to see if there's anything to do with her and Bitcoin, and I couldn't find anything. So based off that, I could assume that she has never in her life purchased Bitcoin, so I could say that she is a no coiner, and as a result of her actions and of not buying Bitcoin, she is my no coiner of the week.
Very good. I'm actually shocked that you didn't find anything on her condemning Bitcoin.
Nothing. Not a single thing. That's why I concluded she's a no coiner.
That's great. That's a good option. By the way, I didn't have to Google her name just to tell you that I knew who she was as soon as you mentioned how she, her mode of transportation.
Yes.
I knew exactly who you're talking about.
So that's it for this show. We're going to transition to the after show now. For people that do want to hear it, we're going to release it as a separate file. Maybe not this week, but certainly for next week. Joey's going to be the person that's going to be dealing with the audio side of things. So if it's on this feed, great. You're going to listen to it. If not, it's going to be a different feed. It's going to be posted on a different day. So the price of Bitcoin, do you happen to have that handy in US dollars? Because let's see if we got a show pump today. I can say in Canadian, it's 39,845. So
I got to pull it up. Hold on.
my block clock's not showing it. Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, we're up. We're up like, what, $80?
So there you go. So just based off that, you're probably going to be invited back on the show, and you may be replacing me. So congratulations. You passed the test. Price of Bitcoin went up, and it's all good. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. Mr. Wayfaring, thank you for filling in for the great shoes of Joey. And with that, take care, PV. Don't be a cuck, and we'll be in the after show in just a few seconds.